We're going to have two guests joining us, and we'll be taking your calls. Our first guest who's already on the line is Vice President of the Arab American Action Network and a well-known media analyst. Ali Abu Nima regularly writes public letters to the media, coordinates campaigns, and appears on a variety of national and international news programs as a commentator on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Ali Abu Nima lives in Chicago and is a full-time researcher at a social policy research center at the University of Chicago. He was one of the contributing authors to Iraq Under Siege 2000 and The New Intifada 2001. Ali Abu Nima is also co-founder of the website electronicintifada.net, and in February 2003, he helped launch electroniciraq.net, a news portal on the U.S.-Iraq crisis. Joining us a little bit later on will be Janine Jackson, who is Program Director for Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, the National Media Watchdog Group, and a frequent contributor to Fairs Magazine Extra. Why don't we bring on Ali Abu Nima at this time? Ali, let's talk about media coverage of the war in Iraq. Some of the things that we've been seeing on the TV, we've seen liberated Iraqis cheering in the streets. Is this widely representative of Iraqi public opinion on this U.S.-led invasion? What do you make of the press coverage on the Iraqi reaction to this war, Ali?
Well, one of the problems of media coverage is none of us sitting here can know. We know that the government is counting on those images, so they have every incentive to try and play them up to sort of give legitimacy to this war. But we have seen reports that some Iraqis have welcomed the U.S. troops, and we've seen a lot of reports that other Iraqis haven't. There doesn't seem to be much evidence of a generalized uprising in favor of the American arrival, which is something that some in the government and media had been predicting.
We're joined on the phone by Janine Jackson. She's a program director for Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, the National Media Watchdog Group. She co-hosts and produces Fair's syndicated radio show Counterspin, a weekly program of media criticism airing on more than 130 stations around the country. Janine Jackson has testified to the Senate Communications Subcommittee on Budget Reauthorization for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. She has appeared as a guest on ABC's Nightline, NBC's Geraldo, and CNBC's Inside Business, among other outlets. And Janine Jackson is the host of Labor at the Crossroads, a cable access show airing in New York. Hello, Janine.
Hello there.
I don't know if you heard my question of Ali, but what do you make of the images of liberated Iraqis cheering in the streets that have been widely shown on the media here in the U.S.?
Well, I fortunately did get to hear Ali's answer. Hi, Ali.
Hi, Janine. And
would concur with it. The only thing I would add is that one of the problems when mainstream media get into this 24-hour, you know, kind of big show mode of coverage is that they report things like, you know, whole divisions of Iraqi soldiers have surrendered, and then they may come on later and say, well, actually, we have no evidence for that. There's kind of a tendency to begin reporting rumors as fact, and that's one of the things we have to watch out for, you know, is we hear Iraqis are using Scuds, and then a few hours later we hear, no, they're not, you know, and so we have to be very cautious as we're kind of, as this coverage sweeps over us, we have to be very aware that what's being presented as fact right now might turn out to be something less than that later on.
Well, Ali, aren't there Iraqis who would welcome U.S. troops?
It's impossible for us to tell how widespread that is. And what is clear is the predicted open-armed welcome has not, there doesn't seem to be much evidence of that. One thing I want to add to Janine's comment is that some of these things that were reported by the media as fact were not merely rumor. They were actual claims by the U.S. government and military that later turned out not to be true. In the first couple of days of the war, the U.S. claimed that it had taken the port of Umm Qasr and had secured the city of Basra. It's now clear that even today, Umm Qasr is not secure, and it has not been taken, and Basra, there's heavy fighting there, and it's besieged. What we know is that the water has been cut off from Basra for the past couple of days, which is a major humanitarian catastrophe for the people there, and that's something that has not received much attention either, because none of the journalists are in Basra. They're all riding in tanks with the U.S. Army and seeing only what the Army wants them to see, and only being permitted to broadcast what the Army wants them to see, because today the U.S. imposed new restrictions on the so-called embedded reporters and banned live broadcasts from any front line.
That's incredibly important, yes. So now they're going to be, this much vaunted front line coverage is going to go through another layer of processing before the information is able to come to the public. This was the unprecedented access of which the Pentagon was boasting just recently.
What kind of access do journalists have to what is happening on the ground in Iraq? What limits their access? Are embedded journalists getting the full story? We'll start with you, Ali.
Well, they're clearly not getting the full story. They're getting, as Donald Rumsfeld said, a narrow slice of the story. That could be useful, but what we've seen is that the military are happy to allow them to broadcast as long as the military thinks things are going in their direction, and I think using them as part of the psychological warfare against Iraq. But now that there are questions about how well things are going, they've slapped new restrictions on them, and there's not a thing they can do about it. And at the same time, all of the major U.S. networks have withdrawn their non-embedded journalists from Iraq, and so Americans cannot rely on any independent journalism coming out of Iraq except what's coming from foreign media organizations who've kept a crews in Iraq. And I think that should be very worrying.
Janine?
Well, I would only add that even the original restrictions for the embedded reporters included were tremendous. You know, those that have been fortified now still further. They already involved military minders and accompaniment of journalists, and they already involved the stipulation that any comments from soldiers or military folks had to be on the record, which, of course, might sound good, but it means you're incredibly unlikely to hear something critical or a cause of concern to a soldier when he has an officer standing next to him and has to give his name and go on the record. So these were already restrictions that embedded reporters were under, but as Ali has just said, it seems a strong suggestion that they were simply an attempt to control information, manipulate information. The very fact that now that things are not going so well, the Pentagon is adding new restrictions, and that makes it all the more clear that we're not going to be getting the full story, especially not from those embedded reporters.
We see much about military hardware and the technology used to attack Iraq, but not much about the human cost of war. Why is that? Janine, why don't we start with you this time?
Well, I mean, I'm big picture. The mainstream media, as we've seen for some time, have sort of signed up and have served largely as spokespeople for the U.S. administration in this run-up to the war. There have been exceptions to that, certainly, and there have been some critical views, but in broad terms, if you were looking to hear any kind of dissent or any kind of even concern about the impact of this war, you would not be going to mainstream U.S. media to get that. So, for example, we found that even when there were major reports that came out on humanitarian impact of war from Human Rights Watch and others, the major networks didn't even give them coverage. They have downplayed the potential humanitarian impact of the war on Iraq from the beginning, which is why I think many Americans will be surprised and dismayed to actually see, to the extent that they can, how bloody and brutal war is, because we simply have it. That hasn't been part of the mainstream media's discussion in the run-up to this invasion.
Ali?
Well, I'm fortunate that I'm able to view the foreign, particularly the Arab satellite channels, by satellite dish, and particularly the Al Jazeera network, which has been showing, I think, much more rounded coverage of the war, including all of the U.S. briefings and all of that, but also information from inside Iraq. And what you see is a very horrifying picture, a lot of dead civilians. It's not pleasant. The U.S. networks don't want to show an 8-year-old boy with half of his head blown off. And I can tell you it's not an image which I relish seeing at all. But it does really bring home the horror of the war to see this. At the same time, it's horrifying to see young American men, servicemen lying dead with flies crawling over their faces. This is war. And people might get angry at me for describing those images, but that is war. That's what war looks like. If you support the war, that's what you're signing up for. And I'm not saying those are arguments for or against war necessarily, but I think people do need to be fully informed so that they can make the decision about whether this is a price worth paying. And I don't think the mainstream media do that. Do give them the information they need and give them a sense of what the human cost is. I really think the media, along with the government, created this false expectation that this war would be a piece of cake. It would just be a stroll up the Euphrates to Baghdad. And I think it's already we're seeing signs that it's going to be something much harder. And even if the U.S. managed to defeat the Iraqis militarily, which in all likelihood they will because of the superior forces, it's going to be extremely difficult to hold on to Iraq, let alone bring democracy and order there.
That's the voice of Ali Abu Nima. He is the vice president of the Arab American Action Network and a well-known media analyst. He's joining us on the phone from his Chicago office. And we are also joined in on the phone by Janine Jackson, a program director for Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting based in New York. She's also joining us on the telephone, and we welcome your calls. Ali, you were just talking a bit about Al Jazeera. I'm looking at a story in today's San Francisco Chronicle. Arab news channel fends off criticism of gruesome images. What it says essentially is that Al Jazeera is coming under fire for broadcasting images of U.S. Military prisoners of war. Do you believe that Al Jazeera should refrain from showing these images, or what's your take on that?
Well, you know, all of the networks use the video that they think is newsworthy, and we see that in this country with the all the shows about car crashes and all of this kind of thing, where they present horrifying car crashes as entertainment. So I don't think the media in this country can criticize Al Jazeera. I think Al Jazeera is broadcasting what it views as newsworthy footage. I think that the U.S. government does not want this footage to be shown because it will affect morale in this country, and it would affect support for the war. I strongly believe that if people see what young American men and women, perfectly healthy, how they're sent to die in a country that has not attacked the United States and presents no serious threat to the United States, they may start questioning the war. Now, Al Jazeera shows images of dead Iraqis and dead Americans. I wouldn't argue that they should show only dead Iraqis or only dead Americans. If they did that, I would certainly question the motive there. But what they seem to have is a policy to show the footage that comes from Iraq no matter what. And they have news crews in Iraq, and they're able to get this footage where other networks aren't. There are always questions of taste, which apply in every case, and I think those need to be borne in mind as well and balanced against the newsworthiness of the footage.
That's the voice of Ali Abu Nima. He's joining us, and we have a couple of callers. Let's go to Dan in Santa Cruz. Hi, Dan. You're on the line.
Hello?
Hi, Dan. You have a question for Ali Abu Nima or Janine Jackson?
A question and then a short comment. The question for Ali, I had just heard about half an hour ago on another radio station that the water to Basra was cut off by the Iraqis, and I don't know whether he was implying that our troops had cut it off, and I don't know what is fact. The comment is, just to use your imagination a bit, because they're always saying California and Iraq are about the same size, imagine a more desperate situation in California with our two political parties and someone coming into our country and driving from San Diego to Redding. They would obviously encounter some people and communities in favor of invasion and some who didn't. It's not non-understandable that there's a division in Iraq, given all the classes and different experiences people had with Saddam. So I think it's really silly that, you know, I mean, obviously we're not in that situation in California, but there's You can imagine some people greeting Republican invaders with praise and others saying boo.
Well,
it's kind of a fantasy situation, but it certainly must be what's happening in Iraq. People have different opinions of Saddam, so we can't expect to open arms.
Thanks for your call, Dan. Ollie?
Yes, of course. Well, the first point, neither I nor Dan knows why the water of Iraq, of Basra, is cut off. And the reports I read on the BBC are that it's not known whether it's a result of U.S. bombing or something else. What we know is that the water to Basra was running before the U.S. invaded Iraq, and the BBC reports that the Iraqis are attempting to restore the electricity so that the water can start pumping again. Having said that, we just don't know. I mean, that's the problem of war. We have no clear idea of what's going on the ground, and people will choose the information that suits them and suits their political viewpoint. So I'm not going to stand here and say we know for sure why there's no water running to Basra, but we know that it's related to the war. As for the other thing, well, you know, the question of how people in California would react, I don't know if how the people of California would react in any situation if a foreign army were invading them. And I think what we're seeing quite naturally is that Iraqis, unexpectedly, is that Iraqis of all shades are not that ready to embrace a foreign invader, because it's the natural tendency of people not to embrace a foreign army coming in whose motives are far from trusted in Iraq, even by those people who strongly oppose Saddam Hussein. So I think we will see, even if the U.S. invasion is quick and successful, any honeymoon that the U.S. forces have will be extremely brief, if it exists at all, before they're viewed as foreign occupiers whose intentions are hostile. And I think that that is something that is borne out by more examples in history than the opposite.
That's the voice of Ali Abunima, the vice president of the Arab American Action Network, based in Chicago, Illinois. He's also a co-founder of the website electronicirock.net, a news portal on the U.S.-Iraq crisis. We're also joined on the line by Janine Jackson, program director of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, the National Media Watchdog Group. She's also a frequent contributor to Fairs magazine Extra and co-host of the weekly syndicated radio program Counterspin. Janine, I know you have to get going here soon, so we're going to fire off a question at you before we take these two callers. The mainstream media continually uses the phrase coalition forces to describe the U.S.-led group of nations invading Iraq, and the media repeats the Bush administration claim that this coalition is bigger than the coalition during the Gulf War. Is this claim true, and what nations make up this so-called coalition, and what are they contributing to this effort?
Well, that's actually a number of questions that are rather, I think Ali might do a better job handling them. I'm a media critic, and although what I'd like to address in that point is simply the way it began, mainstream media continually using the phrase coalition forces, because let's remember that this is the same mainstream media that have been telling us for weeks that, or at least presenting things as such, that the UN was not a view to be taken necessarily very seriously. It was introduced that the U.S., this whole idea of unilateral action by the United States, that we didn't need a Security Council resolution. All of this has been mainstream media's attitude towards international law and the functioning of the UN has been rather dismissive and following the tack of the Bush administration. But now that the invasion is underway, I think it suits both the administration and the media to think of it not as the U.S. going it alone, you know, but as a coalition being involved. I think it's part of, unfortunately, mainstream media's kind of parroting of however the Bush administration is framing it. So if it's the U.S. acting boldly alone, we're hearing that from the mainstream media and why that's okay. When it's a coalition, we're hearing that. Now, what we certainly have not heard a lot about is the kind of strong-arming and bribing and threatening that went into behind the scenes, and maybe Ali can take it up from here, that went into putting together this so-called coalition of the willing. Stories have come out here and there about essentially threats the U.S. has made, offers of money. We know about money offered to Turkey, a real kind of horse-stealing scenario. We heard those stories come out, but somehow they didn't inform the page one coverage of the rationales for this war. Somehow what looked kind of like unseemly backroom deals never came to really cloud mainstream media's presentation of this as a righteous effort in which there was, in fact, a tremendous amount of support for the U.S. position.
Ali, please answer the question, then we'll take those two callers. What nations make up this coalition? What are they contributing? Is it true that this coalition is bigger than during the Gulf War?
Well, it's certainly not. And during the Gulf War, more than 20 countries sent actual combat troops or jets, even though it was still U.S. dominated. In this case, only three countries have sent combat troops: the United States, the United Kingdom, and a small contingent from Australia. All the other countries in the so-called coalition are providing nominal support, and it's a coalition that includes no major U.S. allies and includes no Arab countries. It doesn't even include Turkey, which is one of the closest U.S. allies in the region. And it includes countries like Uzbekistan, which are run by very thuggish dictators. So the idea that the United States is leading a coalition to bring democracy, well, how can you do that if some of your allies in that are as undemocratic as anyone else? It's purely a political fig leaf.
And that's the voice of Ali Abunima, and we just lost Janine Jackson, had to go, so she dropped out of the line, out of the conversation today. And we're going to go right now to Reggie in Monterey, who's been on the line for a while, waiting patiently. Hi, Reggie, what's your question?
Good afternoon.
Thanks for calling.
My questions are for Ali.
Go ahead.
Ali, are you there?
I'm here, yes.
Yes. Are you an American citizen? Are you a naturalized American citizen?
I was born in the United States, but that's not really relevant to this discussion at all.
Yes, it is.
It's not relevant at all.
So you are an American citizen.
I'm not here to be interrogated personally. I'm here to give my views. If you
Reggie,
have a question about my views,
okay,
go
well,
ahead.
You hang on. I'll give you my question. First of all, Ali, how would you like this war to end? Would you like the Americans to be successful? That's a yes or no.
I'm against this war, and I don't think anyone is going to emerge victorious from this war. I think it's a catastrophe for everyone, and I'm sickened by already the number of young Americans who've given their lives for an unnecessary war, which is only going to bring further harm, I think, to the United States and to the people of the Middle East.
Now, you had mentioned that you saw a picture of a young child with its head blown off. You suggested that was done by Americans. Is that correct?
Well, those people in Basra, that is, according to the reports available, the result of U.S. bombing, yes. I think anyone who believes...
Okay, well, wait a second.
Anyone who believes...
This is a two-way conversation, Ali. First of all, okay, now...
It seems
you think it's an interrogation, not a conversation.
Ali,
these are questions that I'm asking. Ali, so you're saying...
Reggie, make your point, please.
No, you jump back, Jack. I'm talking, okay? This is a one-sided... show that you're given. This is the other side, so you jump back. Okay, Ali, now are you saying that you don't want the Americans to win? Yes or no?
That's not what he said, Reggie.
Vinny.
Well, he didn't even answer my question.
I answered your question fully well. I'm against this war. I think the best way for the United States to win is by not undertaking unnecessary illegal wars, invading other countries and trying to govern them.
You ask a question, you don't want to hear the answer.
You're angry because I'm not giving you the answer you want. I'm giving you my answer instead of your answer.
No, you still haven't answered yes or no to a yes or no question. Do you want America to win this?
I don't see it as a yes or no issue.
Either you win or you don't.
Ali, caller, did you have another question for Ali besides whether or not he wanted America to win? I didn't catch that.
He's assuming that Americans caused that severed head of that child.
Well, I heard... Can I jump in just for a second? I heard on NBC last night that the U.S. fired more missiles at Baghdad in 10 minutes. This is on NBC than they did in the whole Gulf War, and they're bombing Baghdad round the clock 24 hours a day. It's inevitable that there's going to be civilian casualties. I don't see how you can possibly avoid that.
Look, you don't know and I don't know, but what we do know is that the United States...
Reggie, thanks for your call. We're going to have to let you go. We've got two other people on the line, and we're going to have to let you go. Thanks, Reggie.
Okay.
Reggie, thanks for your call. We do have other callers on the line.
Why don't we take another one?
We're going to go now to Jason in Santa Cruz. Hello, Jason. Thanks for calling.
Oh, yes, sure. Well, this could also relate with the question about Iraqi civilians. It seems like the corporate media here will report on deaths of U.S. soldiers, but we really don't have much information on Iraqi civilians. And as well, Iraqi soldiers who are often conscripted, and so that's, you know, with or without their will. And especially since this undertaking is justified to liberate the Iraqi people, you know, I could see how those numbers of Iraqi civilians may not be as publicized, but how could we find out what the impact is on the Iraqi civilians there, given the bombardment and attacks?
Well, one thing, the International Committee of the Red Cross is there. There are journalists in Baghdad who've been touring the hospitals, and the information is there, and people give their stories, and they're consistent stories. I mean, of course, people who aren't convinced, people who want to believe that the United States can do no wrong, I call them dumb patriots. I think there are smart patriots and there are dumb patriots. And what we're seeing now is a lot of dumb patriotism in this country. So, in any case, to get back to your question, there is the International Committee of the Red Cross. There are independent journalists there. And there's the evidence we see of television pictures which are being shown all around the world, except in this country. And if we prefer to live in our little media bubble where we're sheltered from the awful truth, that's fine. But the rest of the world is seeing the images. And it was the same with Afghanistan, where you could make many arguments in favor of that, but the evidence is that thousands of people died in U.S. bombing in Afghanistan. Thousands of people died in the first Gulf War, and it's simply not realistic. I mean, it's fantasy to think that you can drop thousands of missiles and bombs on a country and not kill a lot of innocent people, and it doesn't matter how accurate you think your bombs are. You're going to kill a bunch of innocent people. That's a fact of war. It can't be avoided. The question we have to ask is whether we think the aims of this war and the given reasons for the war justify that price. That's the question we have to ask, not argue about whether or not that kid's head was blown open by a U.S. bomb and try and deny the obvious.
Ollie, let's take some more calls. Margaret in Santa Cruz. Hello?
Hi. You know, Saddam is going to kill a bunch of people through containment also. Containment will kill a bunch of people. It will cause many hardships. It's like passive violence. Passive violence. Ollie, are you pro-life or pro-choice?
I don't understand what your question is about.
Of course you don't. Hey, Reggie, ditto. You know, we show images. There are 125,000 Americans killed every month in this country. 125,000 each and every month in this country.
Margaret, can you ask a question that relates to the topic, which is the mainstream media coverage of the war that's taking place right now in Iraq?
I want to see the images. I want to see images of those aborted fetuses in the partial birth abortion babies. How about you?
Okay, thanks. Thanks for your call, Margaret.
Maybe
you're off topic. We're going to go now to
CNN and NBC and let them know you want to see those images. Can we take another call?
Yes, we got Martha in Santa Cruz. Hi.
Okay, well, I usually listen to a different local station, and I heard something really astounding this morning, and also just a few minutes ago from Reggie. It sounded like he was trying to say that the Israelis are trying to show all these wounded people.
Excuse me? I don't think that's what the caller, Reggie, said.
I'm sorry. I thought he was trying to say that the Iraqis were like...
Okay, the Iraqis. What
I'm
you
sorry,
said was
right.
the Israelis.
I know. I'm...
What is your question for Ali?
Go ahead. Take your time. Go ahead.
And I just heard this story about a little girl who, you know, had been hit by shrapnel and was completely paralyzed on the left side of her body, and her mom was sitting next to her trying to get the right side of her body to lay still because she thought that if she could get the child's body to lay still, she might be able to get the baby back and to be whole again and to have full use of her body. But that's never going to happen. And so along with all these casualties, we're injuring all these innocent people. And I just can't understand how anyone could say, well, it must be, you know, the Iraqis doing it to make us feel bad when it's really happening. And I was hoping maybe Ali could help me understand why Reggie or whatever his name, or even the lady, the last caller, who's talking about abortion is going to try to, like, cloud the issue that people are dying because we're dropping bombs. The abortion happens, and it can be an awful thing. People that are pro-life believe that it's an awful thing, and I hear their argument, but why would you want to, like, confuse everything? Why can't you just look at the issue and go, wow?
Let's get an answer from Ali, and we'll take the next call. Thanks,
Thank
Martha
you.
In Santa Cruz.
Well, I'm trying to stay focused on the issue. I think that anyone who thinks that this is a video game and we drop bombs and all we do is score points is just deluded. War is a messy, ugly business. Dead Americans look as terrible and as gruesome as dead Iraqis. And they smell bad. Flies feed on them. They lie there in ditches. Their families may never get their bodies back. I don't like to say that, but that's the reality of war. And when you go to war, you accept that reality. But it seems what a lot of people do is to try and hide from that reality and pretend this is a video game. And it's like Mario Brothers just jumping over barrels till we get to Baghdad. That's not the case. A lot of people have to die to achieve the aims which the United States has set out under a situation where a lot of people in this country and most of the world don't think those aims are either clear-cut or justified. And so we need to decide, but we need to decide knowing fully what we're going in for. And I think a lot of people prefer to avoid that choice.
And that was the voice of Ali Abunima. He is co-founder of ElectronicIraq.net. He's also the vice president of the Arab American Action Network. He joins us by telephone in Chicago, Illinois. I want to ask a quick question, then we'll go to some callers. Ali Abunima, does the press reveal much about who stands to gain from this war and what U.S. companies have contracts to rebuild Iraq?
It reveals some stuff about it, but you have to look. You have to read the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, and then you learn that already the contracts for a post-war Iraq have been carved up among President Bush's and Dick Cheney's close associates and friends. And Richard Perle, who's behind this war, one of the moving forces behind this war, set up a company to profit from it and has also interest in a British firm that's selling things to the Defense Department. The New York Times reported that he has a $700,000 lobbying contract for a company which has business before the Defense Department. Incredible scandals, enormous scandals, much bigger than some of the recent financial scandals which the cable channels went on about for months. But now all of a sudden they're not interested in it. But the information is there for those who want to find it.
And we have a couple calls, so let's try to keep them quick. We have Mark, who's been waiting on the line for a while now in Santa Cruz. Mark, you're on. What's your question?
I'd like to ask Mr. Ali Baba there.
It's Ali Abunima.
Excuse me, that's not my name.
Whatever.
What's the point of calling me that? Do you think will make your point better?
Oh, gosh, give me a break. Hey, listen.
Excuse me, sir. You give me a break. You
simple.
Called me. If you called me up to insult me, that's one thing.
I'm not insulting you.
I have a simple question.
Go ahead. Are you an American citizen?
Okay, thanks for your call, Mark.
We already had that question. The answer is yes. Can we take the next caller, please?
We have Richard in Watsonville. You're on the line on KSEO.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
What's your question?
I really wish Ali would have answered Reggie's question, but I have a separate question, and that was how many bombs did you say dropped down on Baghdad?
Well, I was actually the one who said that. I heard it on NBC
right.
last night. NBC reported that in 10 minutes, more bombs had been dropped on Baghdad in 10 minutes than in the whole Gulf War. That's what I heard on NBC.
Right.
And then they said that they're bombing Baghdad round the clock. So that was actually that was actually me who made the statement. If you have a question for our phone guest, Ali Abu Nima, please ask it now.
Right. It was, what was the body count? Did any three? Did any of the three of you watch Saddam Hussein or his defense minister this morning? Did you watch the whole thing?
Ali?
I saw some of it, yes.
I saw the whole thing. The man's hurt. He didn't move his left arm at all. And he said that only 192 people have been killed in Baghdad,
I mean,
and half of that was his Royal Republican Guard. I guess they hit a barracks where they sleep at?
Ali?
Well, I mean, you think that however many people were killed is a small price to pay. That's your opinion.
No, I'm just saying that's what it is compared to the amount of bombs.
Well, if
don't
you
get
think
after
that...
Don't get after me, Ali. I like Ali Baba.
Okay,
right,
thanks for
the
call, Richard.
We're going to take the next
caller. We're joined by Ali Abu Nima in Chicago, and we're going to go to Martin in Santa Cruz on line 4. You're on...
Yes, I just wanted to say that, you know, you guys are right. I mean, the war coverage in here, I am simply amazed at the polls in this nation, how we've just turned into this warmongering country, you know? I mean, you watch on Fox News, and all it is about pumping up for the war. I mean, last night I was watching a picture of an explosion. I swear I saw a body flying apart. You know, it's like ghastly, you know? I just don't understand.
Do you have a question for our guest, Ollie?
Yes.
Can you ask it quickly? We only have 5 minutes left.
Okay. Is it true that the depleted uranium we're using in there is polluting our own soldiers as they walk through the areas that it's used?
Thanks for your question. Ollie?
I don't know all the facts about that. I know there have been a lot of studies, and I know that a lot of the Gulf War veterans have been extremely unhappy with what they feel are cover-ups by the government. They've suffered debilitating illnesses, sterility, a lot of health problems, which many people believe are related to depleted uranium. And also in Iraq, after the first Gulf War, when the U.S. used hundreds of tons of radioactive munitions, the child leukemia and other cancer rates shot up in Iraq, diseases and malformations that had not been seen before. So it's something that needs to be fully investigated, but there is some evidence there.
Can and will democracy be installed in Iraq, Ali?
I think it's extremely difficult. I think, of course, it's possible eventually, but I don't think that the U.S. will bring it about through this invasion. I think that occupying Iraq, the U.S. Army's job, what it's trained to do, is to break things and kill enemies. It's not trained, and its mission is not to build nations. And I think that the overstretched U.S. Army, I mean, look how many countries we've invaded in recent decades. Haiti. And this explicit goal was to bring democracy back to Haiti. No democracy today. Somalia, no government in Somalia today. Kosovo, no democracy or stability in Kosovo. Afghanistan, 18 months later, the Afghan government barely controls Kabul, and U.S. troops are still fighting battles against unseen enemies, and the media don't report that anymore. American troops are dying in Afghanistan. No one knows when they'll come home. U.S. troops are still in the Balkans, in Bosnia, no prospect that they'll come home. No democracy there, no stability. I think what they tell you to get your support for the war is one thing, and the reality is another. It's very unfortunate.